Hi there, Duke fans. It is Duke Carolina rivalry time, episode number 589 of the Duke Basketball Roundup. I am Jason Evans. I'm here for your listening enjoyment. I am joined by two fine folks. The first one, you could probably guess, is Donald Wine. Donald, how you doing today? You ready for the big game this weekend?
I've been ready for this game. I'm super excited about it. It's that time of year. I think everyone's level of excitement has ratcheted up a bit for this one.
And the other person joining us right now, he often comes on when we preview the Duke Carolina game. He is our go-to guy when it comes time for the NBA draft. Duke legend, ESPN announcer Jay Billis. Jay, how you doing, man? By the way, are you better known now? You're an ESPN guy more now than a Duke guy, right? I mean, in terms of like people on the street.
Yeah, that's probably been true even when I was a Duke guy. I was probably better known for something else.
By the way, I was in school with you. I was a freshman when you were a senior.
Yeah, I remember.
1986. That was a hell. Yeah, you remember? Yeah.
Long time ago. Well, everybody knew you when you committed. It was you and Danny Ferry committing. That was a huge deal.
And Quinn Snyder. Yeah.
Quinn, not so big.
I love it. All right, so Jay, here's how we're going to break this up. Because we haven't had a chance to talk to you thus far this season. We want to talk to you about both Duke and UNC. I'm going to let Donald go first. He's going to ask all the Carolina questions. And then I got a few questions about Duke that I want to have for you, but I'm going to toss it over to my matey over there, and he will lead the conversation for the time being.
Yeah, so Jay, I think we want to start with UNC just in general. Of course, they're number three in the country for now. I know we'll probably talk a little bit about the Georgia Tech game the other night. But for those who have not seen UNC play this year, what's the one thing that they do that Duke fans should worry about the most on Saturday?
Well, they do a much better job of defending than they have in several years past. I think there have been certain years where North Carolina tried to outscore you, meaning, you know, they tried to out offense you. And they've always been really good, usually playing two big guys together, but always have been really good in transition, really good on the offensive glass. They're a good offensive rebounding team this year. Maybe not as powerful as some of the years past where, you know, there was a clear matchup difference between Duke and North Carolina in that regard. This year, you know, they have a traditional kind of stretch four in Harrison Ingram. And although he's not shooting tremendously high percentages, he's really effective. And he's leading the ACC in ACC play and rebounding at almost 12 per game. And then they've got a killer guard. They're playing two point guards together, but RJ Davis is having a national player of the year caliber season. If Zach Edey weren't in the picture, RJ Davis would be right there for competing for that award. I think Edey's already got it on his shelf. He's so far ahead of the pack in that sort of that realm, but Carolina's legit. They're not knockout punch good, but neither's Duke. Like, I don't know how many teams out there are. I think UConn could reach that level and maybe Purdue, but UConn's the one team that I think can really reach that level of being a knockout punch team. But the two teams match up really well together. Duke shoots it better, but Carolina's a little better getting to the glass. They're a better rebounding team. And I think they do a little bit better job getting the free throw line. You know, they make about as many free throws as their opponent attempts. I think they're a few under, you know, being more than their opponent even attempts. So they're good. They're not. It's not like we've seen before. They're different good, but I think it's amazing that, you know, Caleb Love and RJ Davis kind of split up, and Love went to Arizona, and he's having an All America season, and RJ Davis having an All America season. It's really kind of interesting that way.
We'll talk about RJ Davis in a second. I want to stay with the defense because, as you mentioned, they've been stellar. Only six teams this season have scored more than 70 on them, and I think they've held four teams under 60. So what are some of the defensive traits that you've seen that make them such a brick wall for opponents?
Well, I think they've got a bunch of really versatile defenders. So at times, so I think they call it their 14 defense. It's not complicated. It's just they switch one through four. They usually don't switch much with Armando Bacot. They do it really late in the shot clock where he'll switch off. You know, maybe if it's 8 seconds or under, he may switch onto a guard. But they can switch if they want to. They're just grittier and tougher. They're tougher on the ball. They're much better with their help side position. They're not a great shot blocking team, but they do make it difficult for you around the rim. You've got to shoot over them now. And I think before, it's not like they were bad defensively. They weren't. but they didn't lead the way with their defense. Their offense was always the thing you worried about. And now you got to worry about scoring on them. And they limit their opponent's transition. Part of that's because they do run good offense. They don't turn it over much. And neither does Duke, but they do a really good job. They're not taking bad shots where the other team gets runouts. They're not turning it over where the other team gets runouts. They're very effective that way. So it's a much more efficient Carolina team. I don't think it's a great shooting team. Cormac Ryan can shoot it, but he's not hitting at a high rate. You know, he's down in the 30s. For his overall percentage, and he's in the low 30s from three, and he's a better shooter than that. But if he gets hot and if you let him shoot it from the catch spot, he's going to make a lot of those. But they're a very unselfish passing team. There's not as much dribbling this year as there's been in past years. The ball moves. It's just when they go with certain lineups, when Elliot Cadeau and Seth Trimble are playing together, those two guys are non-shooters. And so I think Duke and other opponents can help off those guys and recover late. As long as you take away their drives and keep them off the glass and keep them out of transition, they're less effective. RJ Davis can shoot it from anywhere.
Well, let's talk about RJ Davis. He's no, no surprise to anybody here in Duke Blue. We've heard his name for many years, but unfortunately for us, he's been playing at an All-American level. What's been the biggest improvement from him that you've seen where he's elevated his game to this next level?
You know, I don't know that he's elevated his game all that much, but he's the primary option now. Last year, the year before, he was with Caleb Love. So that's a lot of shots that aren't going to him that were going to Love. And it's not like there was a selfishness issue. You just had two point guards playing together, both of whom could shoot it and both of whom could really score. When RJ Davis, the year they went to the championship game a couple years ago, the turning point, in my view, the turning point of their season was when RJ Davis took over the point guard duties. He was the primary handler, and it let Caleb Love work off the ball. I thought that was a really elevating factor for them. You know, it's not, I don't want to make it sound like he hadn't gotten better. I mean, he's certainly gotten better from last year to this year, but he doesn't play substantially differently. It's just he's the option. He's the go-to guy. And he does it without forcing anything, which is really impressive. He's got a quick release on his shot. He gets into it really quickly. He can score with the ball in his hands and create, and he can score coming off screens and in transition when they pass ahead. And he's unafraid to pull the trigger on any shot, yet he's really efficient. Like, he's shooting an unbelievable percentage from three. He can still get to the rim. He gets fouled a lot. He's just a great player. And he's one of the better guards they've had there, and they've had some great guards.
Another guy that Duke is very familiar with is Armando Bacot. This, I think, is his 43rd year at UNC. To over 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds in his career. I believe he's only the third Tar Heel to do that. But of course, he's good on the glass. What's the best route for Duke to keep him in check and keep him off of the rebounding glass and off the scoreboard?
I think the main thing with Armando Bacot is, one, you have to run with him because he does run the floor. There are times he'll take off a little bit early when he's not going to get the rebound. He just goes. But he's an excellent rim runner. But I think when a guy that's got some size, the defender with size, stays between Bacot and the basket and forces him to finish over, he's far less effective. When he gets an angle to the basket, he's going to score, get fouled, or both. And you just can't allow that. And I do think that Duke or any other opponent needs to put him in as many ball screens as they can. Pull him out on the floor, make him guard ball screen actions. And I think you'll see a lot of that on Saturday. But Bacot's just a ultra effective player because he doesn't do things that aren't his strength. Like, he's not going to step out and take threes. He stays down in the post for the most part. He sets screens and rolls really hard, got great hands, but he's just relentless in going to the glass. And he's a really smart rebounder. He plays angles really well. You don't grab that many rebounds without being smart. He's not doing it. He's not a superior athlete. Like, you don't play at that level without being a really good athlete. but he's a really good athlete. But he's not like one of these superior athletes that's going to jump over you or dunk over you or things like that. And that's why I think taking away angles from him is so important, and not allowing him to get deep post position, because you push him a step or two off the lane, and he's got to take a jump hook or some shot like that. He doesn't make them at as high a rate as when he gets an angle. He's going to score on those.
Jay, hey, just really quick, I want to jump in and ask a question about Bacot. You talked about Duke needs to take him to the perimeter and force him to play, defense in the screen and roll and things like that. Do you think with Kyle Filipowski, Duke does a fair bit of pick and pop? Do you think we'll see? I mean, is this a game where you think Filipowski's taking a lot of three pointers?
Well, I mean, he could, but it depends on whether Bacot's guarding him or guarding a guy like Mark Mitchell, because you guys have seen it. A lot of teams have just laid off Mitchell and played in the middle of the lane. And Mark's doing a much better job of, one, taking up that space and driving it and attacking it. And the other thing he's doing is going to set screens, because if you're going to play off of him, then you're playing two on one in a screening situation. So that sort of action puts his defender at a decision. Arizona did it first, and everybody's copied it. Like they all watch tape. I mean, Arkansas did the same thing to him. And I think honestly, and I don't know if John Shire or Mark would say this, but it's the way I feel it was, at least at the beginning, was that kind of messed with his head a little bit. Teams are playing so far off, you feel like, well, what do I do? Do I just shoot it? And it messes with you. And I think it kind of affected his confidence a little bit. I think it changed around Georgia Tech is my memory of it. And he's played really well. Like he's such a good player and so effective because he can guard multiple spots and he's a good rebounder and all that. Scoring isn't his value. His value goes way beyond scoring. When he does those other things first, then I think his scoring is enhanced, if that makes sense. But I don't know exactly what the matchups are going to be, but it wouldn't surprise me to see Harrison Ingram taking Filipowski and then having Bacot, clogging up the lane and guarding Mitchell.
Getting back to UNC's team, of course, this is one of the most experienced teams in Division One. We've seen most of these names before, but one guy, as you mentioned earlier, that we haven't seen yet, and we will for the first time, is Elliot Cadeau. Very heralded athlete out of high school, known for getting to the paint to score, but he rarely takes or makes threes. Where are some of the spots on the floor that he likes to attack, and how does that affect how UNC's offense operates?
He attacks first in transition, and he's very good at passing ahead. So he's not one of these ball dominant point guards. Carolina doesn't do that. They're not dribbling the ball into the wood every possession. The ball moves better with this team than it did with last year's team, in my judgment. But Cadeau's gonna be off the drive, and mostly right hand drives. And he's gonna try to get into the lane and draw help, and then play out of it or try to get to the rim. He's not a shooter. He can make a little floater, all those things, but a big scoring game for him is going to be 10. Like he's not going to go out in most games unless he's getting some runouts or things like that and get you 15 or 20. That's not the way he plays. But he's a good defender, as is Seth Trimble. I think Seth Trimble's a really good defender, but another non-shooter. And so they have some lineups out there where, you can really help off those guys. You don't want to leave them alone and dare them to shoot, but because sometimes you do that, it's not as effective as you would think. I would rather put pressure on those players than let them operate without that pressure. But you can recover late to them as long as you take away the drive.
The last question I have on the UNC side of things before we switch to Jason and Duke is, we just talked about UNC, a lot of things that they do well, some of the things that they may stretch on, but what's the one thing that UNC cannot do if they want to win this game?
Well, they can't rely on jump shots, number one. They've got to be able to get the ball into the paint, and I don't think they can take any sort of stance where they're not impacting the ball defensively. There have been some times during the season, not very many, but sometimes where they're playing more containment defense, instead of getting out and really impacting the ball. And I think when they impact the ball and pressure it, because they've got guys that can do that, they can be really disruptive defensively. Their help side is really good. They've got really good versatility. But if their rebounding stays consistent and they can, continue to pound the glass, the two guys you worry about the most are Bacot and Ingram. I mean, Ingram's been a monster in rebounding. He's not been as efficient offensively. He's hit some threes and all that stuff, but especially in ACC play, his shooting numbers aren't where I remember them being when he was at Stanford, because he's a little bit of a different player now, but he's what Hubert Davis wants. He wants that hybrid four-man that can play out on the perimeter and be more of a playmaker, and he certainly is that.
Real quick, a follow-up to what you just mentioned about the defense. Last year, of course, the games were very low scoring, two of the most low scoring games in the history of this rivalry, 62 to 57, 63 to 57. That was something that Duke kind of wanted. They said, hey, if our defense keeps them in check, we're winning this ball game. Are the roles reversed this year? Does UNC want this to be a low scoring game, or do you expect this to be a track meet?
I don't think it'll be a track meet. What I think it'll be, what Carolina wants is a low scoring game on Duke's part, and a high scoring game on theirs. I mean, they average in the 80s, so they can score now. So they still want to get out and run. But I think Duke can be effective in taking away their transition. I mean, I do think it's one of these games for Duke where their offense has to help their defense. Duke's not a high turnover team. They average like 9 turnovers a game, give or take. But they're not a turnover forcing team either. Carolina gets their extra possessions on the glass. Duke really does not. They're a solid rebounding team, but not a great one. Carolina's a really good rebounding team. And those two guys, and Jalen Washington can come in and grab some offensive rebounds, so can Jalen Withers, but really the main guys that you have to make sure that are contained on every time a shot goes up for Carolina is Bacot and Ingram. Those are the two guys that can really hurt you on the offensive glass. And that's probably going to be the biggest key to the game is rebounding. And it's one of those things where people think I don't know where this thing comes from about rebounding's all effort. No, it's not. There's a lot of technique, a lot of positioning. That stuff's really important, and Duke's going to have to be on its game as far as making sure they hit first when a shot goes up, because that's where the battle's going to start. Because I think it's going to be a game where Duke's a better shooting team than Carolina, but the question is, can they get open shots? And Duke's done a really good job of moving the ball and sharing it. They're not a ball dominant team either. I think they do as good a job as they've done in the last several years of moving the ball.
All right, everybody, stick with us. On the other side, we're about to take a break, but on the other side, I'm going to ask Jay Billis a little bit about the Duke Blue Devils this season. Stick around. This episode of the Duke Basketball Roundup is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Springtime is the season that's supposed to feel like a new beginning. We have better weather, and it feels like everyone gains a boost of energy. However, for many, leaving winter behind doesn't always mean that their mood lightens up with the extra sunlight. We all carry around stress, and that stress can build as more events get added to your calendar.
That's certainly true, Donald. And with the amount of social gatherings increasing with the improving weather and more daylight, there's more pressure to be on when you're interacting with family, friends, coworkers, even strangers, even when stress has you a little bit down. And for some, getting advice from a therapist can help you tackle some of that stress without affecting you or the people you care about. That's what BetterHelp is all about. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be therapy that's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a professional, licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists anytime you want.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try and find your social sweet spot. Visit betterhelp.com/DukeRoundup today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DukeRoundup.
All right, so Jay, you were talking a little bit about Duke, and I want to move our conversation toward that side of the rivalry at this moment. Right now the Blue Devils are number 7 in the polls. They're just a little below that in the, computer efficiency kind of metrics. The preseason expectations, though, were that this was clearly a top 5 team. Most people had them like number 2 or number 3. Why do you think do you think they play just a little bit below that? And where do you think, this team probably shakes out as the season moves on?
Yeah, I mean, with 4 losses, they've probably played a little bit below it, but they're still a very young team, and they've had some injury issues throughout the course of the year. Proctor went out, if I remember right, in the first minute or two of the Georgia Tech game. That was sort of a stinging blow to Duke in that game. And I don't think early on in the season when they played against Arkansas on the road in a raucous environment, when Arkansas was playing better than they are now, and when they played Arizona, probably second game of the season, that the young guys were prepared for that. How could you be? So Jared McCain's a way better player now than he was then. And I think Caleb Foster is too. There's still a thing with a few of the young guys where they can get taken advantage of in screen roll situations. I mean, I think it happened against Georgia Tech where, Damon Stoudemire ran the same play in the middle of the floor and they got hung up the exact same way twice in a row for lob dunks. But those are things that I think the guys have learned and adjusted to. And I think Duke's much better now than they were then. And, maybe some of the games that you saw, like at Virginia Tech or, the game against Clemson, those would have been games that maybe if they were played in November, early December, they might have lost those games. But they're really capable. It's just this is one of those years, and I can't remember one exactly like it, but it's one of those years where, there are a whole bunch of good teams out there. There aren't a bunch of teams that have separated that have said, "Hey, man, we're knockout punch good." I just don't feel that way. Some of it's feel. Like there were years where you'd go in the Duke Carolina game going, "How are you going to stop this Carolina offense?" I don't feel that way about them this year. This year you're like really impressed with their defensive performance, but you're not afraid of them. Like I don't think any team's afraid of them going in. And that's an unusual feeling for the entire landscape. You're not even afraid of Purdue. The only team I would be really concerned about as the season goes along, I think, is UConn. They're the one team that I think could separate from the pack before this is said and done.
Let's talk very quickly about the Duke defense, because I feel like the team was playing pretty good defense for a while, and lately they have really struggled. Have you noticed anything different going on, or is it just a function of, guys have been injured, and as a result, the team's struggling to sort of find their rhythm again?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the thing when you watch Duke, or at least when I watch them, is when they apply pressure and when it feels like they're more containment oriented. Like there are certain teams I think they can really get out and pressure the ball and be really disruptive. They're not going to be like some of Coach K's old teams back in the day where they're out in passing lanes and trying to force you further out on the floor. That's not the kind of team they have this year that we're forcing a lot of turnovers. They're not a turnover forcing team. They make it really difficult on you. They take away 3-point shooters. They try to make you take tough twos, and they do a really good job for the most part of protecting the paint. And I think because their offense has been so efficient, they've not put themselves in positions where they're giving up runouts and they're scrambling in transition. And that's important. You give up transition layups, all of a sudden your defensive field goal percentage goes way up. And that's not what they're dealing with. They've been an efficient kind of bend, don't break. And they don't have the same rim protection they had when Derek Lively II was there. I mean, you could take some chances with him because he could erase the mistake. They don't have that kind of eraser this year. And that's not a, what are you going to do? I mean, some years you have it, some years you don't. This year they don't. But the fact that they're
Wait,
still very good
you mean that
defensively, that's good.
we don't get a Derek Lively every year? What?
Shocking that coaches can't do that every year. I mean, you'd think they'd go out in free agency and grab somebody. They're usually those guys available
Yeah, right. Exactly.
that don't play early in the season, then they're 11th pick in the draft.
I love it. All right. Hey, let's flip over to the offense for a moment. This is Duke's best 3-point shooting team. They're 38.7%. Their best 3-point shooting team, I looked it up, since 2014. Andre Dawkins, Rodney Hood, Rasheed Suleiman all hit better than 41% from three that year. And Duke was a very, very good three-point shooting team. This Duke team, though, is sort of close to that. They're on offense, they move the ball around well. Like you said, they get a good number of assists. They do not turn the ball over. But, man, this club struggles, really struggles to finish around the basket. They're one of the worst teams in all of college basketball at getting their shots blocked. And like you mentioned earlier, they're not very good at offensive rebounding. Is there something different they should be doing on offense? Should they be shooting more threes? They don't shoot a ton of threes. What, you know, not that they're bad on offense, they're very good on offense, but what would take them to the next level?
Well, like you say, some of the finishing, but you know, you work with what you have. And I think that with Duke's, you know, their guards are small. Jeremy Roach is small. Jared McCain is small. Caleb Foster is small. So they're not going to drive in and just dunk it over big guys. That's not their game. So they're going to shoot a few more floaters, things like that. But when they drive it, really the goal is to draw help and play out of it. And for the most part, they do that really well. I think when you, at least for me, one of the things that I look at as to whether Duke is performing at a high level offensively is how many shots do they get from the catch spot? And they get a lot of them. Whether it was, you know, you look to that Virginia Tech game, you know, they had so many possessions where the ball was on one side of the floor, it's reversed without a dribble, you know, passed again, and then they wind up getting a shot from the catch spot. You know, those catch and shoot, whether they're mid-range shots or threes, that's where Duke's really effective. And when you use the dribble in order to draw help where you can get those shots, I think they're really good at that. They don't have many guys that are going to, you know, put it on the deck or shot fake sidestep and make a shot. Proctor's getting better at that. And I think he's gotten better and better as he's gotten healthier. Look, they can play with anybody. There's the good thing about the Duke team to me, maybe the best thing, is there's not a team out there they cannot beat. The universe of teams that can beat them if they're not doing everything right is a little bit bigger this year, but that's true of just about everybody. And, you know, they've performed at a high level on the road of late, especially. So I think they're really improving there. I think they're showing a really high maturity level, and they have different guys doing it on different nights. So they're not solely having to rely on Filipowski. You know, he gets in foul trouble, they're still able to play through it. You know, Roach has been injured. McCain steps forward. Like, and McCain, he's a stud. He's going to be a great player, and he's really good now. And you can see, like, his confidence level is really high. There's not a shot that he's afraid of, and he's not afraid of the moment, as people like to say. But they're getting it from different guys, and that's good. And, you know, as they get more contributions off their bench, you know, Ryan Young's come in and done a nice job for him. He's a stabilizing force when he comes off the bench. I think Sean Stewart will play a little bit more as the season goes along, and he provides a level of athleticism. And you can see him in the Carolina game because he can go in there and impact the game with athleticism, rebounding, running the floor, defending, and he doesn't need the ball in order to play well. So, you know, they've got some options. I really like their team. It's just not a team like they had a couple years ago where you had a superstar like Banchero say, okay, go get a shot. They don't have guys like that.
So let's talk about arguably the two best players in the team, certainly the two players that get the most NBA attention, Kyle Filipowski and Tyrese Proctor. Flip came into the year as the ACC preseason player of the year. And he was on pretty much everybody's first team preseason All-American list. I don't think he's in either of those spots right now. Tyrese Proctor came into the year. Everyone was saying he was going to be a, you know, mid to high lottery pick. And he was just outside the All-ACC first team in the preseason. I frankly don't think that he's at those levels either. Do you feel like, you know, these two guys who had so many expectations on them in the preseason, have they had years that maybe aren't living up to those expectations? Or, you know, any insight into what you think maybe is going on with those two players who we were expecting a little more than what we've gotten so far from them?
I think they both had really good years. Now, did we place too much on them? Like, when we talk about expectations, we always throw it on the player and say the player's not living up to expectations. We never look at ourselves and say, well, were our expectations realistic, fair, or right? Filipowski's averaging at 17 and 9, and he's having a terrific year. He's been fantastic. He's leading them in rebounding, offensive rebounding, blocks, scoring. He's not shooting free throws at as high a level as you'd like to see as a Duke, if you're a Duke fan. And Proctor has been injured, but he's getting better and better. And he's still going to be, if he decided to come out, he'd be a lottery pick. He's going to be up there because he's going to be coveted because he's still really young. So he's legit. I don't have any concerns there. To me, it's the whole, how the pieces fit together. And I think John Shire's done a really good job with this group.
Well, actually, not the last. I'm going to ask you for your prediction in a moment, but second to last question then. I think there's some great, you've talked about it a little bit already. I just think there's some great individual matchups in this game. Flip versus Bacot, Proctor versus RJ Davis, Mitchell and Ingram, maybe the biggest matchup in the game. And I actually think that like Cormac Ryan versus Jared McCain is huge, a super interesting matchup. What do you think? What's the one matchup in this game that you go, whoever wins that one probably wins the contest?
It's the RJ Davis matchup. If he's going for 28 and making shots and doing whatever he wants, Carolina playing at home is going to have a great vibe about him. And I think Davis tends to lift up everybody around him. When he's not having one of those nights, their scoring can be an issue. Scoring efficiently can be an issue for them. They're still going to score, but are they going to, score 85 on you? But Carolina playing at home is a different deal. It requires a mindset going in there of, you're not going in there to play. You're going in, ready to play. You're going in there ready for a fist fight. And you don't mean that obviously literally, but you have to have that mindset that it's going to be a different kind of effort that's required. And always when Duke and Carolina play, like we can sit here and say it's just another game and all that, but it's not. And everybody knows it. And players are measured by how they perform in this rivalry, and everybody knows it. And so managing your emotions going into it is really a difficult task and one that has to be managed appropriately.
All right, ESPN analyst, what's your prediction for the game? How's it going to turn out?
This year, it seems like this year, if you put your money, and I'm not talking about where the line is, but just, straight up, if you put your money anywhere but the home team, you're taking a risk. Winning on the road this year, not just seems, it is harder. The numbers prove it. And I honestly can't figure out why. So many teams are really capable. I mean, look at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's beaten both Duke and North Carolina when they're highly ranked, and Georgia Tech's unranked. And hell, they played
They're not
against,
even 500. Georgia
they don't
Tech's
even
not
have a,
even
they
above
don't
five.
even,
It's
yeah, they're not,
crazy.
they have a losing record. And then you watch them play against those guys and going, how is this not happening more often? How are you not doing that all the time? It's really a bizarre thing.
So really quickly before we get out of here, we just had to know the last question you had, the last answer you gave. It was so great that your dog was cheering you on in the background. We just want to know which who was that in the background that was barking and yapping. We've had Cameron, Jason's dog, on here providing content all the time. We need to know the name of yours.
That was my dog, our dog June, the rescue dog. That anytime another dog walks outside, Armageddon is coming. And she's the nicest dog until she sees a dog that is like sniffing around our yard without her permission. And I hate to break it to her, but she doesn't own this house. I do.
She's just protected the land,
No,
protecting her people.
there's no protection at all. Because if anybody breaks in here, she's gonna be like licking the murderer's hand as they come in to commit mayhem.
I love it. Jay, you're describing my dog as well. He goes crazy until the person comes in the door, and then he's like, oh, you're here? I'm gonna be nice now.
I don't know what it is. Well, thank you guys.
Hey, you were great. Thanks, man. We look forward to listening to you on Saturday.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jay.
Donald, it is always amazing to get Jay Billis on the podcast. I wish the audience could read our messages. We've been sending each other messages back and forth, and
Yeah.
we keep on going, ooh, that was a good point. Oh, wow. Like the stuff he was talking about, I think the stuff he was talking about how Carolina chooses to guard Kyle Filipowski and perhaps using Harrison Ingram for that. I'll be honest, I hadn't thought about that. That's br I hope Hubert Davis wasn't listening. I think
If
that could
Hubert
be
Davis is
incredibly
listening,
effective. for Carolina to have Armando Bacot on Mark Mitchell. There may be people out there listening who are like, yeah, of course, it's obvious. I hadn't thought about that necessarily. And Jay Billis is just, man, that dude, he knows his stuff.
First off, if Hubert Davis is listening to this podcast, hi, hello. We'd like to thank you for wasting, 30 minutes of your time listening to us when you should be preparing for our team on Saturday. So hi to you. But really, I think some of what he talked about was brilliant. Again, talking if you listen to this show, you know that we're very well versed. We don't like UNC, but we respect them enough to have to watch them
Absolutely.
from time to time. Like you said, we watched the Georgia Tech game the other night. We've watched several games of UNC this year. A lot of this is what the rivalry is about. This is why it's so great in a way. We have, it's not like Michigan, Ohio State, where I don't care about Ohio State. I don't watch them. I don't like them. But for UNC, we follow them because we want to know what we need to do to beat them. And he described it. If you have not watched UNC this year, he described their team so eloquently and just breaking down what makes them good, what players and how these pieces of this puzzle come together. And also what it takes to beat them, right? Like, that's the important thing. That's what we're here for, right? Like, yeah, we don't want to, spend a whole podcast talking about how good they are. We want to know how we can beat them, and with the guys that we have on our team, what we can do to stop them in their house. So yeah, it was incredible. Jay always provides great content when he's on here, and great, quality insight. And we appreciate him for it.
Yeah, Donald, the biggest thing you just said there was in their house. And I really think folks need to look, it's easy when you're watching on television to sort of forget where the game is being played. But Jay mentioned this. I don't have it at my fingertip, but the stats, ranked teams that are ranked playing on the road this year are only winning something like a third of their games. I'm not talking about against other ranked teams. I'm talking about playing everyone. It
Yeah,
is.
so Jason, we talked about this while you were gone. It is 38%. This was as of like last
Yes,
week.
you're right.
38% of ranked teams have won road games against unranked opponents. Not even talking
It's
about everyone,
incredible.
against unranked opponents. So it's super difficult to win on the road this year as opposed to other years. I think we're talking about in 2019, it was close to 70% victory
Yeah.
for the ranked team. Now it's closer to 30%, which just means that more people are waiting to say, hey, look, whatever we're doing, let's take care of our business at home, and is making it very, very difficult. And again, it's the crowd. The crowd, we like to joke and say that UNC is a wine and cheese crowd, and many times during the year they are, but that's never true during the Duke UNC game
No way.
unless we are stomping them out. So, let's stomp them out and let's see that crowd. But that crowd's going to be ready to go, just like we would be when they come to Cameron.
All right, folks, this would ordinarily be the portion of the podcast where Donald and I would get into the statistics and the advanced metrics and all that other jazz that we give you when we preview each opponent. But UNC is special. The Carolina game deserves not one, but two previews. So we're going to wrap up this one, where you got to hear from Jay Billis. Come back to the DBR feed, because in a matter of hours, you will hear the next episode, which will be me and Donald talking about our view of the Carolina game.
And Jason, before we leave, just want to let people know that Friday, not just part two of this great UNC preview, but at Home Field Apparel, they're releasing a brand new collection for Duke stuff. And we've
Oh,
seen
yeah.
some of them. It looks fantastic. So head to homefieldapparel.com on Friday morning, I believe at 10 a.m. Eastern time. They're releasing the new collection for Duke basketball. It is terrific. They have some great stuff on there for kids, for adults. Again, DBR podcast. That is the code you can use. If it's your first order, you can save 15%. Otherwise, head to our link tree where we have a link that you can save money and help support the show in the process. So stay tuned to that. Also, Jason, as you know, we are getting our YouTube channel together. That is still coming. We're still trying to upload all of our, bajillion episodes that we've done on this show. That takes some time. So by this weekend, we're hoping that this will be ready to go. So in the meantime, DBR podcast on YouTube, you can subscribe now and just wait for those to come out over the weekend.
Yeah, by the way, the home field stuff, and I'm not saying this like to pump them up. I'm saying this because it's really good. If you are a fan of the history of Duke basketball and the ACC, there's a t-shirt they have that I saw that I was just like, I must have this. I'm like, and like, unlike you, Donald, I'm not a big, like, I don't buy all the apparel that's out there, but I'm just going to say, there's a Big Four t-shirt from back in the good old days when Wake, NC State, UNC, and Duke played like a special little mini tournament every single year. Had nothing to do with the ACC. It was just because we're all here in the state of North Carolina. We're the Big Four. And there is a t-shirt that commemorates that. I was just like, that is amazing. I can't wait. I'm going to be sporting that thing when I go to Durham in about a week and a half or so to see a couple Duke games. And I guarantee you people are going to be like, where did you get that? I got it at Home Field Apparel and I use the code DBR podcast. So there you go.
Yeah, it's great. That, it's great. Check out for that.
Yeah. With that, we'll wrap up this episode of the Duke Basketball Roundup. For Donald, for Jay Billis, I'm Jason Evans. Here's the Duke band to play us out and take us home. Oh, also I added sort of as my, I figure you go first cause it's mostly about Carolina and then I'll do my questions, but I did, I had one at the very end. I wanted to ask him, I think this is a game of some great individual matchups. Kyle Filipowski versus Armando Bacot, Tyrese Proctor versus RJ Davis, heck, Mitchell versus Ingram, McCain versus Cormac Ryan. I mean, these are big. Every single one of them. I wanted to say to Jay, is there one matchup that you think each team needs to win? And like whoever wins this matchup is probably going to win the game because I think that could be it. My bet is he would say like Flip Bacot probably, or perhaps Proctor versus RJ. I guess you can probably come up with scenarios where RJ outplays Proctor and Duke still wins. I'm not sure there are scenarios where if Flip or Bacot, either one of them wins it handily, that their team loses the game.
If Bacot wins that handily, that means he's probably going off for like 20 and 15, and that's a problem for us. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Especially again in a game where last year they scored 57 points in both games. If he's scoring 20 of them, like that,
yeah,
that means it's a high scoring game.
Yeah, I guess you could probably argue that if Tyrese Proctor outplays RJ Barrett, I'm sorry, RJ Davis.
If he plays outplays RJ Barrett, He's going pro.
That's good. Yeah.
he's going to be a good pro.
Yeah. If he outplays RJ Davis, what's the scenario where Carolina wins in that case? I guess they just dominate the boards or something. You know, like
well, that's the thing, right?
And Armando Bacot destroy on the boards. That's the only scenario I could come up with.
The fact he's scoring 20 points a game and is playing at, like, quite frankly, I'm going to say it on the pod, playing at an all American level.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah.
Like, that could be that, you know, he might be the head of the snake, right? Like, whereas last year, I think it was more Bacot was the head of the snake, and we neutralized them pretty well in both those games, and that was why they couldn't really do anything. This year, they may not rely on Bacot as much.
God, you remember how good Derek Lively was in that game last year? Oh, my
God. 8 blocks. I was there.
Oh, my God.
Both of them.
Oh, my God, that was fun.
We're like, hey, do we think – I don't think that Derek Lively is going to – have 8 blocks again. We're like, you're right. He had like 6.